Good morning, everyone. This is now the second session of the Responsible Tourism Programme here at WTM this year. What I am going to do is just place this session in the context of what we mean by shared value, because a lot of people in the industry are still struggling to understand this. But the basic principle is that shared value responds to the increasing market demand for experiences, and we all know that the demand for experiential travel is growing very quickly. And new markets, like, for example, the Chinese, have moved very quickly into wanting experiences and not just wanting to buy a sun holiday. So it's moving quickly. But the principle of shared value is about expanding the total pool of economic and social value. So it's about creating additional complementary products that can be sold alongside the mainstream products, which are obviously travel, transport, and food. So it's about growing the pie, if you like, and then sharing it up. So it's about the way we do business. It's not about CSR. It's about the way the tourism businesses respond. And I put on the right-hand side of the slide some examples. Now, if you think this is just academic fluff, it's important to recognise that these ideas are coming from Porter, who's at Harvard. And it was Porter who came out with cluster theory about 20 years ago. He's now promoting this notion of shared value and the businesses developing value for the whole society by doing business which is good for them, but developing business in ways which involves others in the neighbourhood and in the communities around them. So I've asked Jane to speak first. Jane is from TUI, still I think the world's biggest tour operator. I'm never quite sure what's happening in China, but outside of that, the world's biggest. So Jane is going to talk first. She'll be followed by somebody talking from CGH Hotels. That's Michael Dominic. Then Glyn, who's on the extreme left there, on the extreme right as you're looking at him, he's going to talk from South Africa. And then Derek Hanekom, who we're very pleased to have here as a minister on the panel, is going to say something himself, but also respond to some of the things that have been said. People have been told they've got between 8 and 10 minutes, so there should be time for Q&A at the end, unless the speakers behave very badly. And I would try to stop them doing that. Jane, if you would go first, please.
Good morning, everybody. I'll start by looking back a couple of years to something that the former UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said on the occasion of World Tourism Day in 2015. With more than a billion international tourists travelling the world, tourism has become a powerful and transformative force, making a genuine difference in the lives of millions of people. So he was highlighting that tourism is one of the leading employment sectors, tourism providing important livelihood opportunities. But it's important words there that the potential of tourism for sustainable development is considerable, and there's still so much more value to be unleashed by looking at tour operations and travel experiences through the lens of shared value. This can lead to new approaches, new products, generating greater quality for customers, better return for businesses, and critically, that's all because they are delivering greater benefits for communities. Shared value is quite core to our sustainability strategy at TUI, our Better Holidays, Better World sustainability strategy. The first and the last pillars there, Step Lightly and Care More, are all around the operations of our own businesses. But the second and the third pillars, Make a Difference and Lead the Way, are really focused on driving incremental and further positive change for people and communities in the destinations that we operate to. With the Make a Difference area, we're targeting to grow the numbers of sustainably certified hotels that we operate to 10 million per year by 2020. We're working really hard to raise awareness and demand from our customers for more sustainable products. And we're focusing on developing more community-oriented excursions through our TUI Collection excursion portfolio. And with Lead the Way, we want to pioneer sustainable tourism across our destinations and we've set up the TUI Care Foundation primarily to deliver that. We've got a target there by 2020 to be investing and raising 10 million euros a year in projects in destinations which are multi-stakeholder projects in nature and really focused on driving additional value to local communities and local people in destinations, working with experts, NGOs, community representatives and local authorities to leverage the benefits of tourism even more than they are at the moment. Some of you might be familiar with the research that was done by PwC and the Travel Foundation a couple of years ago, measuring the impacts of tourism. And you can see that tourism is an incredible driver of economic and fiscal benefits, to the tune in Cyprus of about 84 euros per person per night across the value chain. So the induced and the indirect benefits, primarily of employment there, throughout the value chain being greater than the direct benefits. But one of the learnings from that work was that there was still so much more value to be unleashed by really focusing on products and services that are locally provided, and that was a huge untapped potential. We found that local hotels were still not using products and services that were locally produced, much less so than in fact the general community or a population of Cyprus. So that was a real learning that we then integrated into our strategy. So one of the systematic things that we've been doing is working to increase value of our business to society through our hotel base and really focusing on hotels becoming sustainably certified. And that gives us assurance not only that people are being fairly employed and hotels are minimising their environmental impact, but also that they are actively and increasingly supporting local products, employing local people. And we can see there, both from an environmental perspective and some social indicators as well, that sustainably certified hotels have demonstrably better impacts on society and the surrounding environment than non-certified hotels. So that's been a huge area of focus. And critically, it delivers higher benefits for our customers as well, so higher satisfaction for our customers. I mentioned the TUI Collection excursions. Within a few years, these excursions have grown to be over 20% of our total excursion portfolio, over a million customers a year, going on excursions which are developed very closely with the local community and local businesses to really maximise the benefits to those communities and local people, specifically local food, local culture, and local environment are the heart of these excursions. They've been a tremendous success, and again, what's really interesting there is that customers really recognise and value the authenticity and the local flavour of those excursions above all other attributes of the excursions. I mentioned the TUI Care Foundation, which is driving shared value in a number of ways. One key way is through the establishment of TUI academies in many of the destinations that we operate to. So working with experts in the field, such as Plan International and GIZ, we've established academies which are facilitating vocational training and opportunities for young people in those destinations, often where there's high youth unemployment. Where the youth that we actually select to participate in that training are underprivileged. We really focus in particular on making those opportunities accessible to women in those destinations, which in some of those destinations is not the norm. A number of academies which have been set up. There's a couple of pictures there from our academy in the Dominican Republic, where we've got 150 young people going through hospitality training at the moment. There's a pictures of just a few as they graduated, the first ones to graduate, and they all had jobs lined up when they graduated. Many of them have young children. Dominican Republic has a teenage pregnancy rate of over 20%, so creche facilities are on hand to give those girls a real renewed start in life. And a future career in tourism. Also a picture there of one of our guides that has been trained in Zanzibar at our Tui Academy in Zanzibar. And we have two academies in Namibia, Morocco, Vietnam, and many more in the pipeline. Another key focus of the Tui Care Foundation is on projects which really increase the livelihood opportunities for young people, local people, through tourism. So projects that support local, organic, restorative agriculture, such as here, bottom left in Crete, and top left in Lanzarote, with projects that focus on olive oil and wines being more sustainably farmed, and then critically making the linkages between those farms and those producers, that produce, and hotels on the islands. Another focus is projects which support local craft producers, such as in Cape Verde here, the picture in the middle, or in Jamaica, where we work with young people and local people to tailor the products that they develop to be more in line with tourism demand, and to tailor the way they sell and market those products. And then we can develop communications and excursions to encourage customers out of the hotels and into their shops and markets. And finally then, on the right-hand side, a real focus on projects which support local communities and restaurants to create and improve their culinary offerings, so traditional culinary offerings, enabling again the development of excursions and enticing customers out of the hotel into the community for totally authentic and memorable holiday experiences. So going back to the premise of this seminar today, Michael Porter said, shared value for businesses is all about policies and operating practices that enhance the competitiveness of a company while advancing the economic and social conditions in the communities in which it operates. And he cited three ways to create shared value for businesses. And I'd like to think with reflection that actually the areas that I focused on do actually correspond to these three areas. So redefining productivity in our value chain, particularly in our supply chain, through sustainable operations driven through certification and the improvements that hotels have to make. Reconceiving products, the TUI Collection products have been incredibly successful for us. TUI Blue is another product, a new hotel chain that we've developed, really focused on local culinary excellence and local flavour. And enabling local cluster development, so really shaping the community, creating the capacity within the community, be it through vocational training, be it through the products and the services that are produced through the TUI Care Foundation projects. His final point there, society's needs are large and growing, and in customers, employees, and a new generation of society are demanding business do better. And I think it's clear to all of us that tourism business can only be as healthy as the community that surrounds it, and that customers, increasingly employees, investors, are demanding more sustainable practices from companies. And from the statistics that I've shown and the research that we do every year, we can see that customers are expecting and appreciating more authentic local experiences increasingly. So it makes business sense, absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks very much indeed, Jane, for that. That's an excellent introduction to the ideas of creating shared value. And you were within the time limit, so thank you very much. Michael, from India, from CGH Earth Hotels. The next presentation, please.
Good morning, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen. I come from India, and I represent a hotel group based in South India. So before I go into my PowerPoint presentation, I would just like to share how the idea of CGH evolved. Our model is based on environmental sustainability, the local community, and the local ethos. So I would like to take you back to 1988 when we were in Lakshadweep, and we had a contract with the government. And the government, one of the conditions of the government was that 80% of the 80% of the employee should be from the local community. So it was a big challenge because Lakshadweep is a very isolated area, and to get trained people became difficult. So we had to employ the local people. But what we found was that we realized that the most important realization came is that it is not the built space which is luxury, but more in the experience. So that realization really transformed our company. And this experiment in Lakshadweep, when we took it to the mainland India, it really made the company, the idea, become very profitable. So in Coconut Lagoon, when we started Coconut Lagoon, we took the same experiment where the local community we were partnering with the local community all our programs were based with the local community. So this is the core values of CGH. We have environmental sensibility, including benefiting of the local community and local ethos. When we say environmental sustainability, we say that we should do nothing which will actually affect the environment. It was always based. Our first question we ask when we start a project is, how is it going to affect the environment? If there's any negative to that question, then it was always a no. So the first priority was always environment. And then also we found that to mix with the local, to be partnering the local community was not actually a corporate social responsibility, but rather a business model where it was a win-win situation for everybody. When we partner with the local community, we found that the ownership of the local community was very strong, and the genuineness of the local community in welcoming the guests and everything became so, the guests were able to really feel the warmth and the genuineness of these of the staff, because they were able to, they had the ownership to the product. And the local ethos, I would say, is that say that each locality or each project should be different from the other. It should be that like, for example, in Coconut Lagoon, it's the theme is, it's a Kerala village where traditional wood was used for construction, and was traditional wood was used for construction, and it was a Keralian experience. So these are some of the benefits which we have been able to create from the like using the environmental sustainability of the number of work, giving employment to the local community in mandates, and the value in Indian rupees. So we have the local artists coming and performing, and the local girls who are actually being the main ambassadors to the guest, ambassadors for the hotel to the guest. And another important aspect is building the local entrepreneurship, whereby our procurement was almost 60-70% was from the local community. The vegetables, the dairy products, the meat, everything we are procuring from the local community, thereby supporting local entrepreneurs. But I would like to underline the main point I want to say is that by partnering with the local community, we found that it was a win-win situation, and the CGH model's success is that because the ownership came from the local community, it was a win-win situation whereby they own everybody, the complete village where our project was supporting the project, and thereby it gave us a lot of the government and everybody supported the whole idea of the project as such. Thank you.
Michael, thank you very much indeed. I'd just like to say that as great as that presentation was, Michael, that it's a fantastic product, this. Yes. And the range of ways in which local value has been created is really impressive. And it's perhaps worth saying that three of the speakers here today are up for awards on Wednesday, so do come along and don't miss that. That's TUI, TMPD, African Ivory Root, and CGH Earth with Coconut Lagoon. So they'll all be on the awards platform on Wednesday. But thank you very much indeed, Michael. Glyn.
I'm done. Yeah, thank you.
Glyn, 8 minutes. This is Glyn O'Leary from TFPD and the African Ivory Root in South Africa.
Michael very generously donated me 2 additional minutes from his time, Harold. Okay. So I'll do my best.
Glyn, I need to see that in writing.
I'm from a company called Transfrontier Parks Destinations. We operate in South Africa, and our business model is to manage community-owned lodges. As soon as you see the presentation come up, it'll make it a lot easier. But I think the important thing I want to share with you right now is that I'm not here to talk about the principles of shared value or the policies or any of the other things, but rather to talk about shared value in action. We operate in South Africa primarily in areas that are incredibly remote. Just to give you an idea, you can see there's a lodge called Kaus Lodge, which is in the Galagadi Transfrontier Park in the west of South Africa. It belongs to the Kumani San and the Bushmen. And to put yogurt on the table for breakfast for our guests, we travel 720 kilometers as a round trip. We operate in areas where unemployment is in excess of 50%, almost double the national average for South Africa. So shared value is not an option, it's a necessity in the way we operate. What we inherited when we took over the various camps was, as that sign depicts, entities that were completely not working. Not just broken, but completely not working. They had either been abandoned and were set to decay, or they had been built and left without any resources, without funding to operate them with, without experience amongst the community members. And we as a company don't own anything. The only asset we have is a contract with the community. The communities own everything that we manage on their behalf. So what we inherited in every case was really a recipe for failure. It was incredibly well put by a leader of the Bushman community. In fact, the minister was involved in handing over the land to that community at the time of the land claim many years ago. And the leader of the community said, "The land has been given, but the rains have not come." And the reason he said that, because that was the state of the lodge that had been handed over to the community. The power of partnership is critical to making these successful. And today, Kaus Lodge is a 4-star lodge owned by the Kumani San and Mir communities and is a fair trade certified business. But what is really important about Kaus Lodge is that as a 24-bed lodge, it's generated over 40 million rand in economic activity in this incredibly remote area. To get to the lodge, you travel over 90 sand dunes in a 4x4 vehicle to find the lodge perched above this enormous salt pan on the 91st sand dune. And of the 40 million rand of economic activity to the region in the 10 years of its existence, 18 million or 16, 17 million rand has actually gone directly to the community or into their asset. Witsieshoek Mountain Lodge, one of the highest lodge in South Africa, perched on top of the Drakensberg with that phenomenal view onto the Drakensberg amphitheater, was set to close in 2010. It was so derelict that the king from the area had said he was going to shut the doors. Today, that's what Witsieshoek Mountain Lodge looks like. But the significant thing of that photograph is that all the furniture in that photograph is made by the local communities. And that's where shared value plays its role. So what have we done over the time we've been involved? This is really a summary, and I'll talk about some of the individual case studies. As part of our mantra, we specifically work on developing micro-enterprises and supporting micro-enterprises, looking for new ideas for entrepreneurs in the areas and trying to assist them in growing their business. And as you can see, over that period, the community entrepreneurs have earned over 7 million rand out of business activity they have done with our lodge. Now, that figure is actually probably double or treble or quadruple that amount. We don't know, and the reason we don't know is because we aren't able to actually measure what guests spend in those environments or people who return to those environments spend having met these entrepreneurs in the first time. What we do know, though, is that in the case, for example, of the Khalakhadi, and I've used case studies from all over the country that we operate, the crafters, the bushmen, whose traditional skills and ancient knowledge is what gives them the ability to earn a living, have earned in excess of 2 million rand from the crafts that they produce that get sold to the guests that come to our lodge. In the Drakensberg, Mr. Muleti, very proudly sitting in that picture, was a carpenter who made basic kitchen cabinets. When we refurbished Witsieshoek, we needed furniture. We got some that was made professionally. We took it to the lodge, and we invited Mr. Muleti and some of his people to come and steal with their eyes. And we said, if you can make the furniture of at least as good a quality, we will buy it from you. He's busy making us dining room tables at the moment, and we have spent in excess of 1.2 million rand, and Mr. Muleti is now a lodge furniture manufacturer and not just a basic kitchen cabinet maker. Tefo Makhosani, one of the most brilliant potters that lives in the area of Kwakwa. We needed bedside lamps for the lodge. We met with him. We saw some of the pots that he was making. We said to him, if you turn them upside down, you drill a hole over here, you make it like that, perhaps we can buy bedside lamps from you. We've spent over 80,000 rand with him, but more importantly, as a consequence, he's been able to set himself up in the industrial zone in Harry Smith and is now running a very successful enterprise there and employing people doing it. We started the first ever village visits for Intrepid in the village, little village called Bloberg in the middle of nowhere. Since they started, we introduced their visits to the village taverns, dinners in the houses of people that live in the village, and they've spent over 600,000 rand with the community in that area. But sometimes you can measure all of these things in monetary terms, but you have to ask yourself, what is the value of the social interaction that's created? And that truly is priceless. These ladies, first there were five, now there are 30. All ladies who harvest salt from a sacred hot spring on the banks of the Klein-Letaba River in the province of Limpopo. They collect the water, they filter it through these large filters, and they sell their salt. They used to sell it or trade just with the Sangomas. They had no income from their salt harvesting. Today, their salt is recognized by the Slow Food Foundation in Italy and is used in some of the most upmarket restaurants in South Africa. And the ladies are now earning more than double what they were earning at the time that they were doing it. But what is critical about it is that there's a retention of a craft, because none of the children of these people wanted to actually go and harvest salt. Because who does if you're not going to earn anything from it? And that's one of the biggest challenges you have to face. We've introduced with an eco-psychologist some homestays in the village of Venda near the sacred Lake Fundutsi. And in its very first year, it generated 80,000 rand of income for the local people in the local communities. The camps that they stay at, that are part of what we run, earn half of that. So we're generating double the income for the community by comparison with what our own camps earn. And it doesn't end with just that. There are so many other things that happen. These are two groups of ladies, one from the Makwarani community and the other from the Muteli community, We organized for them to meet with one another so that the Makwarani ladies, who are very professional in their traditional dancing, could help the Muteli ladies to understand what it is that tourists are looking for and how they could meet that interest. But the really interesting thing was that the Makwarani ladies told us that they'd earned around 20,000 rand from the business that we send to them. And they'd taken all that 20,000 rand and they'd bought new uniforms and they'd bought new drums and new equipment, because that way they were now in demand in the local community to perform at weddings and ceremonies and other things. So it's not limited just to tourists. This is a scripture by a man called Pilato. He's got to be one of the most amazing artists on the Rapola art route, but there are many others. And that particular scripture is, you will see the picture on the left-hand side. It's his centenary year of his birthday this year, Nelson Mandela, who at that time was burning his passbook over a brazier, and Pilato has created this, an image of that. Now, it is in that area that artists provide the most unbelievable experience for people who go to look for it. And that's where working with tour operators becomes so important, because, as Jane was saying just now, that's what TUI is looking to do. That's what guests are looking for. If we don't expose guests to it, because we just follow the normal traditional let's do it the way that it's easy and it isn't broken, so why try and fix it approach, you'll never achieve anything. Just one last example. In the Drakensberg, we're working with a young man, Sibusiso Mvulani. Sibusiso is a very keen pony trekker. He set up a small company to do that. I've interacted with him quite a lot. He was on a marketing trip with my colleague Tish in Scandinavia last week, or the week before, and we're looking to set up a joint venture with him to turn the Drakensberg area into the adventure destination in South Africa. And through his enthusiasm, his capacity, his interest, he will become one of our partners in that venture. But what does it all really at the end amount to? We as a company generate revenue for the community owners, and we grow the value of the assets, their assets. And we believe, well, we know that through the rental we've paid and what we have spent on the development of the assets that belong 100% to the communities, we've spent over 51 million rand. And if today those communities had to go and sell their assets, their lodges, they would earn at least 175 million rand from the sale of them. Why is that important? Because when we started, the community said, these are white elephants and they're worth nothing to us. So over the period, it's all about, as Harold will say so often, growing the pie. Through direct employment, we have spent 41.3 million rand with the communities, and we employ 95% of our people come from the communities in the area of our lodges. The rental and growth in asset value, 226 million. Local procurement, 37 million. And the shared value with the micro enterprises we've helped establish is 7 million. And that is growing. So, if we're going to ensure the sustainability of places into the future and the well-being of communities that live in those areas, both currently and in the future, then this type of development is critical. And I'm going to just end with a very quick story. That's a man called Ezekiel, who is our maitre d' at Witsisuk Mountain Lodge. And one day, shortly after we'd taken over the lodge, I was asking him how he felt about life with TFPD since we had taken over managing the lodge. And he said, let me put it this way. He consulted with the other members of staff, senior members, and asked them if it was okay if he could speak on their behalf. And they said, that would be fine. And he said, Glenn, before you took over running this lodge, my children were doing very badly at school. They went to school hungry every day of their lives. Since you've taken over running this lodge, my children are doing exceptionally well at school. The codicil to that story is that today his son is a pupil engineer at South African Airways in Johannesburg and doing incredibly well for himself. Thanks, everyone. I was quite good.
I mean, just go and sit down.
You were quite long.
Vin, thanks for that. I mean, I would just pick you up on one point. You said that tourists, that we were being lazy by not developing these shared value products. I think we're way beyond that now. We know that tourists are hungry for it, and those businesses which don't develop these kinds of things will slowly fade away. And that's partly why the internet stuff and the disintermediated, all those local experiences you can buy on Viator are so successful. And TUI's realised that very clearly. It put a lot of effort into improving the quality of the visitor experience. Minister Hanekom, it's a real pleasure to have you with us on a panel. It's unusual for us to have a minister, and particularly one of your long experience of tourism in South Africa. It's a real pleasure to have you here with us today. And you know about the origins of responsible tourism in South Africa in 2002. Are you going to be talking on the opening of World Responsible Tourism Day on Wednesday about how much progress has been made since then? But do you want to just respond to this and reflect on this agenda and where that's going?
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, hello, everybody. Good to be here. You know, politicians are not really meant to do this. We're meant to get written speeches, and we have people who prepare our written speeches, and then we deliver them. So the person who prepared my written speech is feeling very upset that you made me do this rather than deliver my written speech. But I'm very delighted, actually, because what we had from the three speakers is more than a small dose of inspiration, and really sharing with us what this thing is: shared value in tourism, inclusive growth in tourism, responsible tourism. These are all very, very, they're not just glib phrases, very important concepts. So let's start with Michael and Glenn. So Michael talks, and to quote Michael, it's about shared value in action. Not just a theoretical notion, but let's do it and let's learn from each other and let's be inspired by each other in the doing of it. And so what we saw from both Michael and Glenn, is examples of the doing of it and how much it means to the people that benefit from it. So that's what Glenn said, shared value in action. Now, Glenn spoke about a place called the Klaus Lodge. And he said to me that if any one of you can pronounce Klaus Lodge, you will get a free weekend at Klaus Lodge, as long as you bring your own yogurt with you. Jane shared some very important thoughts with us, starting with Ban Ki-moon and, you know, the many things that he said, but I just take one when he says tourism, you know, making a genuine difference in the lives of millions of people, and I think that's our challenge. Because obviously we want to grow tourism. We see huge potential in tourism, economic potential, opportunities, jobs that follow from growth in tourism. But I think that the essence is covered by Ban Ki-moon when we say tourism making a difference. And making a difference has to be a bit more than creating jobs, a bit more than contributing towards GDPs, a bit more than creating other economic opportunities, although all of that is very important. Then Jane went on to say, just to remind you, she says, Step lightly. Tourism takes us and takes people with money, seeking experience, wanting to experience something different, to far and remote place, far-flung areas where there's often no other economic opportunity, but often socially and environmentally sensitive areas. There are people who live there who feel that this is there and correctly. This is our land, this is our place, there's an environment that tourism depends on that is very sensitive very often. So step lightly, but step lightly does not mean don't step. Step. You know the old thing about a ship, it feels safe in the harbor, but that's not where a ship is meant to be. So step, but step lightly. Second thing, Jane,
I've learned a lot of things from you. Simple. Do what Ban Ki-moon says, make a difference. When you do your tourism, make a difference in your own life, because that's what tourism does. It enriches. You come back from a travel experience, you come back enriched. You come back a slightly different person. But in doing it, make the lives of the people that you connected with slightly different as well. Come back feeling and knowing that you've made a little difference in the place that you visited. Often an environmental difference. Many of our environmental programs would not be possible without the tourism revenue. Our expansion in conservation areas in South Africa is possible because those conservation areas are tourism attractions and generate revenue. And the revenue enables us to put more land under conservation because it generates revenue. But the big challenge is to ensure that the revenue is spread, that the value and the value that it brings is shared by local communities, because local communities, at the end of the day, are your biggest and most important protectors of the environment, of wildlife, and all sorts of other things. So, and then finally, Jane, to quote Jane, lead the way. So, I mean, we've got some fine examples to help us lead the way. The tourism, by its very nature, is an experience that is partly could be a wildlife experience, could be a cultural experience, could be a sporting experience. It could be a city-based experience. It could be a food and wine experience. But whatever the experience is, it's a people experience. It's people who make the food and wine. It's the people who serve the food and wine. The song and dance is not done by machines, not even in this era of artificial intelligence. It's done by people. And so tourism connects us, when we travel, with people. The question is, what is that? What is the quality of the connection with the people? What opportunities exist in that connection with the people? I want to just share a few thoughts that I was just picking up. Seeing Glenn presenting, for example, you know, in Witsieshoek and Klaus, the fact that local people made the furniture. Why not go one step beyond? Why not say that this bedside lamp made by a local group of people or local person is for sale? You can stay, you can spend your 2 or 3 days in our lodge. When you walk out, you can take this thing with you, but you'll pay. And another one will be brought in and another. So it's permanent job creation, not just the furniture that is made when you create the lodge. What about pictures on the walls? Art. Art, to say every work of art. Now, often a small business finds it quite difficult to spend all the money to put nice art on the walls and crafts, etc., that enhance the place. What about every single piece of art saying this is for sale? And you replace it, and it's continued job creation, if you like. So these are just some thoughts. The a very interesting study done by, in my carefully constructed notes, I'll find it, by a group in the UK. So APTA Travel Trends. In the study done this year in 2018, 70% of the people whom they interviewed said that they believe that travel companies should ensure that their holidays help local people and local economies. That's what people want. It's no longer the tourism of 20 years ago. It's no longer going to a place just to lounge on the beach and soak in the sun and the sunshine, etc. It's much more than that. People are looking for authentic experiences. People are looking for connection with local arts, local cultures, and feeling it and immersing themselves in those experiences. That is why some of the, let's say, the technological innovations, even Airbnb, make a difference. Because some people will choose to stay in homestays. And Airbnb does help facilitate that. The stay, and I'm going to end here, the stay in that homestay does more than, in many cases, does more than offer some kind of income to the local person. For that local person, it's an, and for the local song and dance provided at these lodges, it's an opportunity to share with people from other parts of the world the things that you take pride in, the things that mean a lot to you. People love, not only for the income, they love to showcase and show off their cultures, their song and their dance, and they love to share their home and their township, their neighborhood with travelers because they love it. You know, they're proud of it, and that's what we want. And the people who have that type of experience, nothing against the big 5-star hotels, etc. But often that experience is a more profound, unforgettable experience. Something that you take away with you that has changed you forever. But it also changes in a little way the lives of the people that you touch. So I think we need a kind of a rethink of what we do and what we promote. And it is not one or the other, but I think the shift should be, and I think is, towards responsible tourism and shared value in tourism. At the end of the day, if those real tangible benefits are not there, you won't get, and I think Jane made that point, unless the local people that are there around your tourism offering, unless they are enthusiastic supporters, the offering will be a poor offering. You'll go and stay in a place, but around the place you'll be unwelcome, and your experience will not be a good experience. Lastly, in addition to the wonderful places, Glenn, that you talk about and you show, I myself have chosen to stay in backpackers in townships sometimes. We have to break the prejudice. It's not just about doing it because it's the right thing to do. Very often, it's a different experience and a great experience. Going to Lebo's Backpacker, for example, in Soweto in South Africa, and I'm sure we can give examples of many places all over the world. It's a great experience. It's not something you do because, well, you know, it's socially responsible. We have to add it to our list because then we'll feel better when we come home that we did something socially responsible as well. It's a nice thing to do. It's a great thing to do, a fun thing to do. So I think that's the message that we're getting. I think us here, we must spread the message. Spread that different notion of what tourism is and the value that people derive from tourism if we do tourism in the right way. Thank you.
Minister, I want to take the first question, which I don't normally do, but I do on this occasion. I want to say, first of all, thank you for the enthusiasm. It's a rare thing to hear a Minister of Tourism speak with such passion about local community engagement, and we thank you for that. It means you have to be on lots of panels, I'm afraid. But the question I wanted to ask you, you look at the figures for Tourism South Africa, and we know that your established mainstream industry doesn't really like selling township tourism all that much. But I look at the numbers of people who are having that experience. Are they not understanding what's happening? Are they not understanding that the market is changing rapidly around them?
I think the challenge... Can you hear me?
Yep.
I think the challenge is really to get the tour operators and the travel agents to understand it and to come to grips with the fact that their own customers are looking for something different and to understand, to actually go there and understand it themselves. So often travel operators are the ones that are more afraid than the travelers. And so they're afraid that there might be an incident. Or they don't even go there and understand it themselves. They've never been there. They've never been in a township. So I think those of you who are in the business, encourage the travel agents that you interact with to go there and experience it for themselves, that they can break some of the myths and break some of the stereotypes and prejudices that people have.
It is one of the great, just to finish, it is one of the great things, I think, about the liberalisation of the South African economy, that it is possible for those township operators now to operate without necessarily the support of the bigger operators. They've managed to do it. I think that's fantastic. But who has the first question? You've all been beaten into silence by the erudition.
Hello. Lovely presentations. Thank you very much. Very captivating. Loads of engaging content. I'm also from TUI, but I have a question for the other members of the panel. I found the CHG and the TFPD presentations fantastic in terms of the really granular data about how shared value can be created locally. And my question is for Mr. Hanekom, especially because TFPD is here today. I wanted to find out how can operators like TFPD be supported by the public sector to really share the story of what they're doing, how they're doing it, and help them create even more shared value in the local community. What support can be given to really tell the story and help maximize the potential that businesses like this have?
How much did Glenn pay you to ask that question?
I was going to ask that as well.
I'm going to pay her now.
Well, firstly, I mean, even though it's the... Can you hear me still?
Yeah.
Those lodges that were shown on the screen, those are community-owned lodges that were actually funded by government. in some cases 100% funding from government. But because the local communities are not necessarily in a position to manage those lodges, Glen is there as a kind of a management company, managing it on behalf of those communities. The benefits go to the communities. So that relationship continues. I think that agencies, but again, let's not only talk about South Africa. I think the same thing in India. So I think government role needs to be defined for these companies to do it on their own without government support. Very, very difficult. The marketing agencies play a critical role. On their own, let's say a Taos Lodge or a Coconut Lagoon are not able to market their product internationally, etc. But the marketing agencies like SA Tourism are able to do that and give them special attention because they deserve special support.
I think there's another question here somewhere.
Yeah, wonderful presentation. Thank you so much for your time. Again, a question for the Minister. So you said as tour operators or as in the tourism industry, we should be encouraging the tour operators that we work with to go out and find new types of experiences and new types of accommodation that are really, at their core, promoting this shared value. So that sounds like a great idea. I'd love to be able to tell our 1,300 tour operators, go find these types of experiences and we'll market them and sell them to our travelers. And actually, I would say most of our tour operators are keen to do that. They know there's the demand there as well. Where we really struggle and where they really struggle is they don't know how to find the great lodges and, they have their negotiated prices for the last decade, how to negotiate the same types of prices there. So do you have any suggestions on maybe for the minister or either of the two lodges, how do our tour operators connect with you?
Glenn, I think you should tell that specific story that you have. You can leave the name of the company out if you wish, but they should be named really, but I know you won't want to do that, but at least explain what happened.
I spoke on a panel some time ago with someone from one of the big tour operators, the DMCs in South Africa, and immediately afterwards, the person was so blown away by the discussions we'd had and what I spoke about that he invited me to their offices to do a presentation to all their staff, which I did. They loved it. They were very enthusiastic. They said, we're going out there. We're going to sell it to the world. And they're a big organization. About 18 months ago at ITB, I met the chief executive of that organization. I was introduced to the person, and she was told about these fantastic products that we have and that they really want to sell them. And the first question she asked me, the very first question, was, what commission do we get? And I said, well, you're one of our favorite clients, and so we give you a 25% commission. She said, you got to be joking. If we don't get 35%, we cannot sell you. Thanks very much for chatting. Goodbye. And I was dismissed. Now, the problem that we have is that when you're running remote operations like this, when you're paying out additional income to communities, if you take 35% off our rack rate at Taos Lodge, we will go bankrupt. The organizations who pressurize us to give them those commissions will then immediately abandon us and say, well, you can't look after the maintenance, you can't look after this, you can't look after that, because so we're now not sending clients to you. So it is a challenge. It's a serious challenge with the way those things are structured.
Michael, can I ask you, Michael, is it also a problem in India for you in Kerala?
Yeah, I think it's a big problem in India where we are mostly driven by trade, and so we encourage the person who experienced it, the guests who come actually to really tell the story. And word of mouth, I think, is the most powerful way of letting the world know about it. Because we find that once somebody has been told, actually the experienced person has been, he goes out and tells a story to the world, there is a lot of follow-up business which comes, and it's very, they believe it much stronger.
Jane, do you want to... Actually, I'm sure you don't want to defend the big operators, but do you want to give a perspective from the operators on this problem?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're in the lucky position where we have destination management companies in many of the destinations where we operate to, and particularly with the TUI excursions, the collection excursions have been so successful that our teams there are actively on the ground looking for opportunities. In addition to that, we've got a whole range of opportunities that are being opened up through the TUI Care Foundation and the projects that we're working on there. So we have got the eyes and ears out on the ground, and local companies are approaching our destination services companies all the time with excursion opportunities and new products.
It's also obviously the case that the industry is changing, and it's interesting that both CGH and TFPD are beginning to become operators as well. You're beginning to organise for your clients in the accommodation to go from one place to another, and in a sense the whole industry is changing. I think those operators who've not realised that are going to be having some difficulties in 5 or 10 years' time. Is there a final question? Everybody's happy. I've got all the answers to the questions you want. Can I ask whether there is, apart from Jane, a large tour operator in this audience? There we go. They're not here. Minister, we need your help to get them to listen. Would anyone like to say anything finally from the panel? Have we missed anything, Michael, that you'd like to say?
Yeah, I would just like to mention that shared values, we actually encourage the development of the product is right at the bottom, rather than we have something known as the CGH cell, where we have a communication from bottom to top, where we encourage the local community who are working with our product to come out with new ideas, whereby very innovative ideas are actually coming out. So that's it's a very interesting model to really make the local community keep developing the product.
So yeah. Derek, do you want to go next?
Okay. Thanks, Harold. Something that perhaps I didn't say when we... In our tourism strategy in South Africa, we never only talk about growth in tourism, growth in numbers. We always talk inclusive growth. So I think that's quite important. And there's another very useful UK initiative, because it's more than about tourism. It's about, you know, in our economies generally. There's an initiative in the UK called Coalition for Inclusive Capitalism, which I think is very interesting. And so it's much more than corporate responsibility, if you like, corporate social responsibility. It's about really making our economies more equitable, more sustainable, and more inclusive. This initiative, I should say, is supported by big foundations like the Rockefeller Foundation, Ford Foundation, Rothschild, and the Carnegie Foundation. I think it should be part of, let's say, a changed vision that we have of what kind of economies do we want to live in, and how can tourism play a leading role in reshaping economies? Thanks.
I'm just going to let this man in with a very short question.
It's actually not a question, just to take a little bit further of what Mr. Michael Dominic just said. The shared value starts right at the bottom. He spoke about the CGH cell. By the way, I work for Michael Dominic. So one of the initiatives that came from the very bottom was from the CG itself was why can't we start a restaurant where everything that is served at the restaurant, including the crockery or the food, the furniture, everything else, should be within the 50-mile radius of the resort. And so it took us about 6 months to conceptualize the whole thing. But the whole idea came from the right at the bottom of the pyramid. And today it's one of the most successful restaurants in the area, in a place called Takeri, very popular place. And everything that's served at the restaurant is grown within the 50-mile radius. And the benefits of all that goes to the local community, because we buy our meat, the vegetables, the furniture was made in the local village there, and including the uniforms. We went and brought uniforms where it was locally worn. So the benefits of all this goes to the local community. So that's a great example of what Michael Bumley just said.
Thanks for that. Jane, do you want to have a final word?
I guess I'd just like to say it's been a real privilege to hear a Minister of Tourism speak so passionately and naturally and with such insight into sustainable tourism. So thank you very much.
No more than 30 seconds.
I just want to say that I am really encouraged, though, despite some of the challenges we face, to see that there is a move towards the type of products that we provide, the type of products that CGH provide. And I think that move is going to increase. I think it's going to sweep tourism, because it is true that when people leave knowing that they put something back into an area, when they meet a lady who was able to use the money she earned to buy a bed and sleep in a bed for the first time in her life, that's what brings emotion to people and their travels. So unfortunately, we're talking to the converted here, as so often happens, but we need to be able to spread the message wider, and it is happening.
Could I ask the audience to thank the speakers in the usual way?